I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our new podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. We're both journalists who moonlight as poker players, and that's the lens we're going to use to approach this entire show.
We're going to be discussing everything from high-stakes poker to personal questions.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
And of course, we'll be talking about the election, too.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hunter Biden's charges, Josh Hammer, Tudor Dixon's here, Dr. Scott Atlas joins us. What a show tonight on I'm Right. Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, let's have a talk about the state of the presidency as we currently sit here. And we'll get to the election implications of all this in a little bit. Just Hunter Biden's so dirty. And Joe Biden's so dirty, and it's so well known by now that I think we're kind of missing some things because we're too close to it. And this is what I mean. Think about how this looks for America internationally. Who's the head of a nation you like? Are there any heads of any nation you like? But let's say president of Germany, the German head of state. The German head of state, if his son was currently being indicted on multiple felonies, tax evasion, trying to write off prostitutes, drugs, illegal firearm purchases, that's something that would be lampooned right here in the United States of America. Yet, that's happening here. The Biden family is terrible. And let's talk about something before we get into the actual charges, too. I know you're going to think I'm getting soft. I promise I'm not. Hunter Biden needs to go to prison. That's fine. You do almost have to feel a little bit sorry for Hunter Biden, though. What a tragic tale it is. You remember, we've talked about this before on the show. You remember Joe Biden about to be sworn into Congress. Gets in a terrible wreck. People die. It's awful. Hunter Biden is injured. No, a broken arm. I believe the injuries were more severe, but Hunter Biden is injured, and he's a small child at the time, a little boy, 4 or 5 years old, I believe. He's really, really small. And Joe Biden decides he's going to use his son's injury. His son, imagine your son, your baby boy, injured. He decides he's going to use it to help his political career. And Joe Biden, with the option to be sworn in Congress or sworn in the hall of the hospital, demands that his swearing in be held in the hospital room where his baby boy laid injured. And not only that, he forced him. There's pictures available. You can go look it up right now. Hunter Biden was wearing a suit. He forced his freshly injured son to dress up for a photo op because it would help his political career as he got sworn into Congress. Now, we look now, Hunter Biden was in his 50s, and we see a disaster. Look, $1.4 million in missing taxes. He made $7 million. $1.4 million in missing taxes. He's writing off things like prostitutes and pornography. We know about the drug addiction problem, crack. Crack. He's hooked on crack. We look at the disaster of Hunter Biden now, and it's easy to throw snowballs at him, and I do all the time. That's fair. I'm not telling you not to. But man alive, with an evil father like Joe Biden, he really never stood a chance. If your dad looks at you as nothing more than a political prop, what chance do you have? And so what's the latest on all this stuff? You remember David Weiss, he was the guy who was investigating Hunter Biden, supposed to be bringing charges originally, except David Weiss is a card-carrying member of the system. So what he tried to do, he tried to get Hunter Biden off scot-free, essentially. They tried to bring a deal to a judge that said, okay, Hunter did some stuff, he did these things, that's really bad, but hey, here's what we recommend. It's a little slap on the wrist. And oh, by the way, any future charges, he's immune from that too. They tried to basically get him kind of a blanket immunity, slap on the wrist type deal. The judge sees the deal. The judge is reading the deal, freaks out and says, what is this? Tosses the thing out. Well, then this thing got really public. Then this thing got national. So Merrick Garland has to appoint a special counsel so he doesn't look biased. And of course, he takes the guy who just tried to get Hunter Biden a sweetheart deal and makes him the special counsel. David Weiss is now the special counsel, except now there's a situation here. Now, David Weiss can't get a sweetheart deal like that again. Now everyone's watching. Now you got caught. Now you got to play it straight. You ever sit at the dinner table when you were a child? Mom's forcing you to eat your peas. And for a while, you're kind of sneaking them to the dog under the table, maybe wadding them up in your napkin. And it's going well for a while. But then, boom, mom walks in just as soon as you're feeding the dog a handful of peas. And then you're busted. And now she's standing there and she's watching. No. You're eating your peas. Now you got to eat the peas. Now Hunter Biden's got to go down. What's this mean for Joe? Well, here's Hunter.
They're trying to destroy a presidency. And so it's not about me. What they're trying to do is they're trying to kill me, knowing that it will be a pain greater than my father could be able to handle. And so therefore, destroying a presidency in that way.
Well, I didn't know Hunter Biden was such a fan of the show. How long have I been telling you that? I think the powers that be are tired of Joe Biden, frustrated with him, and I think this entire thing is a coordinated effort to get Joe Biden to resign. The system wants Joe Biden gone. And it's not at all because of the economy or his failures or something like that, or the fact that Joe Biden can't talk.
The idea, if you were driving your automobile here and you left in the key in the parking lot, you left the key in the ignition, and a kid came up and jumped in and stole it, and they got in a crash, you're liable civilly. Why in God's name do people not have to lock up their firearms? Why is that not a requirement? All these mass murders, not this weekend, but have been because people have picked up, kids have grabbed stuff off of counters, off of their... Anyway, I don't want to get angry. We need to ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines.
It's not actually because of that stuff. It's because Joe Biden's unpopular. The system doesn't care about his stumbles and fumbles. The system certainly doesn't care about inflation. They don't care that you're sitting there in the grocery aisle horrified at the cost of a pound of burger. They really don't care about that because they don't care about you. They do very much care about themselves, and they care about power, and they want to hang on to it. And they're looking at approval ratings, and they're awful. They're abysmal. Joe Biden may be the least popular president in the history of the United States of America. Well, the system doesn't just hand back power. Oh, well, guys, we tried. No, the system needs him to leave so they can bring in somebody who will be slightly more popular, right? And look, it's not just me. It's not just hardcore anti-communist Jesse. You have card-carrying libs like this Charlemagne guy calling for him to go.
I know he thinks he's got this in the bag, but the polls say otherwise. I want Biden stepping in to beat Trump the way I want him stepping in to defend me at a bar fight. I appreciate you caring, but I don't like our chances. The facts are, Biden's not getting any younger. He's not going to get any more popular, and he's not getting a new running mate. So please, Mr. President, give America the ultimate Christmas gift and step aside.
Ouch. Not only did he say that, he said that to a live studio audience full of Democrats. And did you hear how it was received? Did you hear any boos? Did you even hear any groans? Oh, no, that's mean. No, what you heard was, yeah, get rid of him. And so how do you do that, though? How do you get rid of Joe Biden? Well, you know what my theory is and what my theory has always been. They're going to use Hunter Biden's charges as leverage to get rid of Joe. Hey, Joe. We'll cut him another little sweetheart deal. A couple years in prison, something like that, but you got to go. And in comes Gavin Newsom. Just a theory. Anyway, we'll talk to Josh Hammer about these charges and all this craziness. We have so much to get to tonight. Scott Atlas is going to be great. All that's coming up tonight on I'm Right. And all that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Before we get to anything else, let's talk about what Hunter Biden should have done. You see, if you owe the IRS a bunch of money, whether it's 10 grand or 1.6 million, you really need to get a hold of Tax Network USA. Hunter, hey, call me, shoot me a text or something like that. I will hook you up with Tax Network USA. What are they? They're the people who get you out of a jam. Are you in a jam? Have you missed some taxes? Are you owing a lot? Stressing about it? Oh my gosh, we're going to jail. Stop. Tax Network USA, they've heard it all before. They know exactly what you're going through. They will work it out. They do this for a living, taking on the IRS, getting people like you out of jams. Get a hold of them, please. TaxNetworkUSA.com/Jesse. Don't take on the professionals at the IRS with your expertise, my expertise. I don't know what I'm doing. Tax Network USA does. TaxNetworkUSA.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
First of all, my son's done nothing wrong. I trust him. I have faith in him. And it impacts my presidency by making me feel proud of him.
Yeah. Well, that's not aging very well, is it? Well, neither is Joe. Stop. Joining me now, my buddy Josh, host of the great Josh Hammer Show. Josh, okay, you're the lawyer. I went to community college, so I'll probably leave this mostly in your hands here. This sounds really bad. It looks really bad on paper. I'm looking at all these charges, a bunch of felonies. These aren't even the gun charges, some misdemeanors thrown in. At the same time, we have a special counsel in charge who was trying to get him out of all these charges before. What do I make of any of this, Josh?
Well, I think what most people should make of this, Jesse, is that this is further evidence that there has been a concerted effort, which we know from various whistleblowers and the IRS and other levers of the government. There has been a concerted effort to try to sweep all of this under the rug. Recall, Jesse, that the only reason that we actually got this superseding indictment from special counsel David Weiss was because the judge assigned to this case, Judge Noriega, I think it was in late July, rejected the plea deal. And a lot of people thought that this plea deal would just be accepted. That plea deal would have made all of these possible subsequent charges go away. So the fact that here we are, and it's only been a few months, and there are, I think it's 9 additional counts, up to like 17, 18 years in prison or so, potentially speaking, that is further evidence of a massive cover-up within the Biden DOJ, David Weiss. I mean, the whole thing stings from top to bottom here. As far as the nature of the charges themselves, these gun charges and these tax charges are very straightforward. The gun charges, I mean, he literally admitted that he was a crack addict at the time he purchased that firearm. Here, as the media has covered to some extent, not nearly as much as they should, but when it comes to these tax charges there, he was literally writing off thousands and thousands of dollars of strip clubs and hookers and all this salacious stuff as purported tax deductions. I mean, what kind of accountant is Hunter Biden using? I wouldn't recommend that guy to my next door neighbor, but it's really bad stuff, Jesse. The $1 million question, this is, you know, where folks like you and me who do this for a living have to be closely engaged. Are they actually going to reach a result where he sees jail time? That's the only question right now that I think matters.
And what's your answer to that question, Josh? I You know, I'm the most cynical human being on the planet. And obviously, as you just pointed out, they tried to scam him out of these things with that kind of blanket immunity deal they were kind of trying to cut for him before. But that deal obviously blew up, as you just pointed out. So now, aren't they kind of in a bind where they have to do something to him? Even if they don't send him to the clink for 18 years, they kind of have to do something now, right?
Jesse, I am cynical enough where I just simply do not see Hunter Biden going to jail. I just cannot see it happening. I sincerely hope that I'm wrong, because based on these charges, based on the gun charges, based on the tax charges, if this man's last name were anything other than Biden, he would be an open and shut slam dunk case to spend some time in jail, not necessarily the maximum number of years under the relevant criminal statutes or anything, but some time in jail. These are very serious offenses, both the gun charges and the tax charges. By the way, we've barely dipped into any of the foreign stuff. We've barely dipped into foreign corruption. We've barely dipped into FARA, possible violations of the Foreign Agents Registration Act. We haven't even touched any of that. And already these gun and tax charges are actually very serious stuff. But I just don't see it happening, Jesse. I think the most likely outcome that he takes some sort of plea deal that they get the same judge or a different judge to rubber stamp. But here's the possibility that I'm holding out for. Obviously, Democrats are souring very hard on Joe Biden. They see Joe Biden down in the polls right now to Donald Trump and the other Republican candidates. What if Joe Biden actually does, sometime after the DNC convention next summer, decide to give his son a full pardon and then step out of the way, because he wouldn't be able to kind of bear the stink of that corruption and venality favoring his son, the nepotism of it at the ballot box? What if that is his off ramp that the Democrats can go and nominate Gavin Newsom, Kamala Harris? So that's a possibility, I think, as well.
Josh, there's another possibility I haven't heard many people talk about, and I'm curious, if you think this is the dumbest thing you've ever heard, please tell me. We're friends. That'll be just fine. What about the possibility of Hunter Biden rolling over on his dad? I mean, after all, we all know Hunter Biden is not the mastermind of anything. Obviously, Joe Biden is the head of the family. Everyone knows that. He's the bag man. In mafia circles, when the bag man is facing 18 years in the clink, it's not uncommon for him to roll over on the boss. I realize it's his dad, but are we thinking about that?
I don't think that's crazy at all. I mean, this is clearly a dysfunctional family. I mean, to put it mildly, this is not exactly kind of an all. This is not an all-American family with the mom, the dad, the son, the daughter, the dog, the cat, the white picket fence. The Biden family obviously is not that. And you know, I don't want to be overly harsh here. They obviously have had some personal tragedies. Beau Biden, Joe Biden's wife, dying many decades ago. So they obviously have had to overcome some tragedies. So I don't want to be too harsh when it comes to that, but they have issues. And you know, I think personally Joe Biden is probably harboring immense personal guilt over the way that his son Hunter Biden turned out. I mean, wouldn't you? I mean, you know, your sons are great, obviously, but like, wouldn't you harbor guilt if your son turned out this way? I know that I would be shamed for the rest of my life right now. So I can't imagine, despite what Joe Biden tells the cameras and these text messages that have been leaked over the years, they definitely don't have a particularly close relationship. How could they? Look at how the guys turned out. So I think it's totally fair game to speculate as you're speculating.
Okay, let's move to the GOP, the low-T GOP. This impeachment stuff on Joe Biden, it obviously should happen. It's very obviously not going to happen. Do you disagree with any of that? Can't we just fast forward right to the part where the GOP fails to impeach him and we just move on to something else?
Well, Jesse, this was so obviously never going to work from the get-go, and that should have been obvious to anyone who has covered Capitol Hill, who has covered Republican politics in particular for any number of years now, that I'm just not entirely sure why Congressman Comer went down this path to begin with. And that is not to say anything about how horrible the Biden family is. I mean, every new detail that we see looks really, really bad. The corruption appears to be systemic, it appears to be deep, and it appears to stink like high heaven. But what I and many others have said, you know, at Newsweek, we ran a great op-ed from Congressman Andy Biggs of Arizona last February, calling for the impeachment of Alejandro Mayorkas. I was on that team all along. To me, it always made a lot more sense to start by trying to take a smaller scalp, Secretary Mayorkas, who is overseeing the worst illegal immigration crisis, the worst border crisis in the history of this country. And that kind of ties into my broader proposal to Mike Johnson and House Republicans, which is make immigration the issue, not like one of multiple issues. Make that the issue that you are prioritizing in every committee, in every investigation, in every jurisdiction in this presidential election year. It is an issue that Republicans have a lot of appeal to swing state voters. Mayorkas is horrific, horrific at his job. I think they should have started there and not gone for Biden.
Josh Hammer, thank you, my man. I appreciate it. All right. Now, we have a big one coming up next, too. Dr. Scott Atlas, do you remember all the COVID lockdown, 15 days to slow the spread stuff, Fauci and Birx and Trump? But you remember all that, right? Well, there was a doctor as part of that task force who stepped up and did the brave thing and told everyone in the White House, no, you don't lock down a country. What? Ever? What? No, face masks don't work. No. There was a brave truth teller, and his name was Dr. Scott Atlas, and he was ignored. And he was shoved out, and he was ostracized. And we're going to talk to him about that in a moment. Before we do that, let's do this. Let's talk about our dogs. When I left to come to the studio today, the entire freaking family, wife, both sons, were on the floor playing with the dog. The dog owns everybody in the house. And that's why we give him rough greens. That's why we give Fred rough greens. Fred used to have digestive problems after every meal. He hasn't had one of those since we started him on rough greens. He used to get ear infections all the time. Doesn't get those anymore. Does your dog have too many health problems? Our dogs die too early? It's because we don't give them nutrition. Pour rough greens on your dog's food. That's it. Your dog will love it. All the vitamins, minerals, probiotics, all the nutrition your dog needs. Roughgreens.com/Jesse or call them 833-33 My dog. We'll be back.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The lockdown is really against all evidence and, frankly, common sense. The policy itself is killing people. The policy of lockdown and total isolation has impaired and stopped most medical care. We are creating a massive catastrophe in healthcare and killing people by this very policy. But society must function. The cure here is worse than the original disease at this point.
That is the great Dr. Scott Atlas, author of the book, A Plague Upon Our House. It was very, very, very uncomfortable to speak plain truths like that back when the good doctor was saying those plain truths. Let's talk to him about that now. Doctor, why come out and buck all the conventional wisdom at the time? Wear your mask, stand 6 feet away from everyone, just lock a bunch of old people behind plexiglass. Why didn't you just go with that? It would have been easier, probably even more profitable for you.
Well, yeah. You're correct on both of those. It would have been easier and certainly wouldn't have suffered the financial downside that I did. But the reality is, you know, frankly, you have to understand what's important. It's very simple. I mean, you have to know right from wrong. I was called by the White House in July of 2020 and asked if I would help the president. People were dying. He was being fed completely erroneous information. The country was frankly off the rails. And, you know, I'm an American. It's my country. The answer is yes, I'm going to help. And so, you know, I really was naive. I have to say, I didn't realize the tremendous amount of backlash, character assassination, even from my own employer at Stanford University. But in the end, people depend on you to say the truth. We live in an ethical society. And I got thousands of emails, if I may go on here, thousands per week begging me to keep going, keep speaking the truth. It became apparent, even though I didn't seek that out at all, that people depended on people like me to speak up. I had emails from people whose, a spouse, daughter killed themselves from the lockdowns. And this is just such an abhorrent fiasco, the worst public policy disaster really in modern history. I had to speak up.
It is. It was the emails I have still break my heart to this day. I still get them of suicides, mm-hmm. What happened to special needs kids, older people dying alone. Just the most evil stuff in the world. So walk us through this, doctor, for those who have forgotten or didn't realize what was happening at the time. Okay, so the Trump White House calls and said, hey, doc, come in, we need your expertise. You bring the expertise in, you speak the truth. How was it received by the Trump White House? Why weren't you propped up? Why am I still watching Dr. Fauci on TV and not Dr. Scott Atlas?
Well, that's sort of a complicated question. Basically, I was speaking up since the spring of 2020, writing because I was sort of frantic that we were ignoring basic fundamental biology and all the data, really. So I was visible. I got called up. I was asked to help. And then I was asked specifically by Jared Kushner, not just to advise the president, but to sit in and be part of the task force meetings. And I said, well, that doesn't make sense. These people are entrenched. They've been doing these lockdowns and school closures and really irrational, harmful policies against conventional pandemic policy, by the way, for 5-6 months already. They're not going to listen to me. He said, no, it's important. So I sat in. And I was bringing in all the data. I was bringing in folders of the science, of the papers, of the up-to-the-minute data. I was speaking to epidemiologists all over the world every day, basically. And yet I was refuted by Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx, who was really the head of the medical side, with only one thing. No papers, no data, simply, you're an outlier. And then they would go to their friends in the media, and the media was very complicit, aggressively trying to destroy anyone who spoke out against the so-called conventional narrative. And they also did something else, which is important. The public doesn't understand. They, the media and the government, but particularly the private corporations, YouTube, Google, Facebook, they censored people like me, including Twitter, even while I was advisor to the president in 2020. They censored us. Why? Because they don't have the argument. They couldn't win the argument on the data. They blocked the narrative. They blocked anyone speaking against the narrative. And what that did was falsely imply a consensus to people. So regular people watching, not only did they, even if they didn't think it was common sense to do these lockdowns and destroy children with school closures, what they were hearing was this narrative of a false consensus, and in fact, a demonization of people like me who were called dangerous, even by really ignorant faculty members at Stanford, where I work, but also many places, people who are completely clueless. And they get what they got what they wanted. They got the lockdowns. They, the lockdowners, own the record. And the record is, over a million Americans died from COVID and massive destruction of children, a healthcare crisis, an obesity crisis, massive psychological harms. And really, we have only seen the tip of the iceberg of what they did to particularly low-income and poor families.
Doctor, you mentioned something in that last answer about lockdowns being against conventional wisdom. Sorry, I'm paraphrasing. I'm not sure exactly how you put it. The very idea that a government should point at its society and stop it from moving in response to a virus was always insane to me. The first moment I heard it suggested, I just about fell out of my chair. And yet, that is thought of as conventional wisdom now. But it wasn't before this, was it?
It's contrary to accepted pandemic management, Jesse. People don't realize this is another thing that was suppressed. For 15 years, in fact, the classic review paper was written in 2006 on management of viral respiratory illness pandemics. And they explicitly said two things. Number one, lockdowns don't work. And number two, lockdowns are extraordinarily harmful. So they were not recommended. These lockdowns were against the conventional accepted management of pandemics from the get-go. And they were being led by people who were both inept and potentially had ulterior motives, including simply the power of it all. So it wasn't a scientific decision. There were other things going on. And it's easy to speculate why. It's hard to nail down the reason. I think there are multiple different motivations. This was contrary to accepted pandemic management from the get-go that was known for more than a decade.
Doctor, you said when you sat in these meetings in the White House, because of Jared Kushner's invite, that you brought the data and you told him, hey, this is a mistake, this is wrong. Burks and Fauci said, oh, he's a nut job. But they very clearly listened to them and not you. Who was the decision maker in the White House who made it? Was it Trump himself? Was this a Pence thing? Who decided to choose Fauci and Burks over you?
Yeah, that's a complicated question. There were basically two messages going out from the White House, which the federal policy written to all the governors was written by Deborah Birx. The official federal policy was the task force. The task force said lockdowns, et cetera, school closures. That was Birx. And the most visible face of it, of course, was Fauci. And you could see all the recordings. So that was the official policy to all the governors, all the local officials. The head of the task force was Vice President Pence. And although he nodded and said, yes, he agreed with me, he went around the country and really amplified, with or without Birx, her policies that were pseudoscience, masks, et cetera. On the other hand, Trump, as everybody remembers, was out there saying, you know, we should open the schools, we should open businesses, because he knew the common sense of it. He didn't realize that he was spot on, that the data for decades was that severe economic downturns kill people. They literally kill people, particularly low-income families. So there were two parallel messages, and this, of course, created almost the chaos that was part of this whole management, was that there were two totally disparate messages coming out of the White House. The reality is the official policy should have been determined by the person in charge. That's the president. But the official policy really was sent out from the White House Coronavirus Task Force. And that's what was acted upon.
Yeah. Yeah. Go read his book, A Plague Upon Our House. Doctor, I thank you for many things. I thank you for speaking up when it was hard to speak up. Everybody's freedom-loving now, but there were very few people willing to speak out back then, so I applaud you for it. Dr. Scott Atlas. Anyway. All right. Tudor Dixon is going to join us next. God, that COVID stuff just gets my blood pressure. Can you see the vein? Just locking down a country for a friggin' virus. All right, anyway, Tudor Dixon's going to join us next. Before we do that, you're not stuck in your timeshare. I want you to understand something. You are not stuck there. They lie to you. If you want out of your timeshare, and maybe you've even tried to get out, you've been sending emails, maybe even picked up the phone, hey, let me out, and they tell you every time, nope, sorry, can't, sorry, nope, pay your annual fees. And the annual fees have doubled. Special assessments, everything. You want this all to stop? Lone Star Transfer is how you make it stop. This is a family business. A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau. 99% of the time, they are successful. They will legally and permanently break you free of the chains of your timeshare. But they can't do it unless you call them. One phone call. 844-310-2646. Call them. Break free. We'll be back.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You know, there's a mental health crisis around the world, Jake, that we hear people talking about. I think that one of the main reasons for that is that young people look at the fact that we are not yet solving the climate crisis or dealing with some of these other challenges. And we hear this word thrown around, polycrisis. Well, solving the climate crisis is a poly solution. We know what to do. We have the means to do it. And we have to make sure that we make the right political choices in our democracy to enable ourselves to make the right choices.
Our democracy. They do love that word, right? They love that word. We're not a democracy, of course, but they've repeated it over and over and over again, and they have a purpose for that. Anyway, we'll talk to Tudor about that and many things. Joining me now, Tudor Dixon, host of the Tudor Dixon podcast. Tudor, it's wild to watch the communist in the way he uses language. They started in on this a couple years ago, democracy, 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 just kind of peppered it out there and prepping the ground for people. Now people think that's what we are.
Of course. Well, that's the plan, is to, you know, that's why he invented the internet, Jesse. I don't know if you remember that. But he did that so that he could teach us all the word democracy, and then we could believe that that's what we are, and then ultimately we would all get in line. But, I mean, they are really pushing us to get in line on this climate change. And this is, I mean, we just had somebody talking about this the other day, saying even behind the scenes that climate change is a hoax, that all of these journals are trying to make people say climate change is real just so that they can get more grants to do more research to manipulate us on climate change. It's ridiculous, but it is affecting some of us in really serious ways, like the state of Michigan, where we now will have our police officers in EV vehicles. And what happens when that vehicle is not charged and you're in the middle of one of the most violent cities in America?
Yes, and Michigan has a few of those cities now, don't they, Tudor?
Too many, actually. I mean, we have five of the top 20. It's ridiculous. It's very sad when you look at Detroit, when you look at Lansing. Lansing, I think, is the 18th most violent city in the country. That's our capital city. That is where we just saw a school shooting last year at Michigan State. We've also seen many murders there in the year since that. And yet we're going to put our police officers in EV vehicles, which I think, aren't those even a danger when you have this giant battery and you're out there trying to fight crime? Aren't you a target for people to just attack that vehicle and potentially do something even more dangerous to our police officers? The whole thing is ridiculous, but it's all based on this lie that they want you to believe that EV vehicles are somehow not coming from being powered from a coal plant.
Tudor, why are they converting everything? How did all this happen? Why is this happening?
Well, we are so fortunate that we not only have had one governor that became the energy secretary, even though she says that it's much better to actually use oil and gas, but she's a little confused. But now we have Governor Whitmer, who has decided that this is going to be her stamp of approval for president. And in fact, I've heard that she still thinks that she will be running for president in 2024. She still thinks that Joe Biden won't be the choice. And so she believes that if she goes out there with this radical agenda in the state of Michigan, where she is going to take all of our, we're going to be completely renewable energy by 2040. But you have to understand, right now we're about 16% renewable energy, and she thinks that by 2035 she will have us at 50%. This is completely insane. After just last year, she had our nuclear plant shut down. We could have continued running that. There were options for her to try to keep that online. And then once she realized what she had done by allowing that to shut down, she started to scramble and look for buyers. Now they're trying to restart it, and it looks like they're going to have trouble with that. So I guess in the state of Michigan, we'll be relying on windmills and solar power. And I got to tell you, Jesse, those things are hard to shovel snow off of.
Tudor, you're a much kinder person than I am, which I realize is not difficult. But I got to tell you, when you tell me things like that, I think back to the election where you just ran against her and how she won, and she didn't win by 1 point. And I say to myself, this is what the people of Michigan want. And if it's just because they love abortion so much, then this is what they deserve.
Well, I think I will argue, because I will always argue this with you, that we as Republicans are not as sharp in the election cycle as the Democrats are. And we've got to get ourselves together. We've got to get with it. We've got to have the right messaging. These are things that we should have been hitting her on, and we should have had the money and the advertising out there to do it. And the Republicans are not putting money into their races, and the Republican teams are not focused on the right message. Why would this not be the right message? Look, they're also trying to shut down Line 5 in the state of Michigan, which will completely impact the Upper Peninsula, but also the Lower Peninsula. Anybody who's using propane is just out of luck. And there's no way you're going to have 2,500 trucks a day going across the Mackinac Bridge. This is insane, but they're very close to doing it. And this is the messaging that Republicans are missing out on, because we're getting caught up when the Democrats come after us and they say, oh, this person is evil because of this. We're not able to get out of that. We're being defined, and we're not able to define the other side.
What happened to Detroit, Tudor? And I realize that's a long story, but tell it. I want to know what happened to Detroit. The American history of Detroit is fascinating, how it became this wonderful manufacturing hub and was a finance giant. I mean, Detroit helped win World War II. And now Detroit is a punchline. I wish it wasn't, but it is a punchline nationally. We'll go to Detroit. It's a joke. How did we get here?
I always say, you don't hear people like, where are you going on spring break? Oh, I'm going to head out to Detroit. That's our spring break. No, of course not. And that was this whole entire state of Michigan. When you talk about World War II, I mean, we had a factory here, and World War II, that factory was immediately turned over and started making bombs. The state of Michigan was the state that you went to manufacture. That is not the case now. And every day Whitmer pushes more and more manufacturing out of the state of Michigan. There are a few things that happened. Democrats got control. Energy is way too expensive in the state. Manufacturing is leaving. But the city of Detroit specifically, the folks in the city of Detroit, they could not pull themselves out of poverty if they tried, because the regulation in the city of Detroit by the Democrat city managers and the Democrat mayor are so extreme that you would have to be a billionaire to go in there and be able to start your own business. It is disgusting. It is the Democrat elite holding people down and saying, we don't care if you want to rebuild your city and you want to live in a beautiful community. We will continue to make sure that the overregulation is so extreme, you can't even purchase your own business. You can't even get through the licensing to make sure that you could purchase your own business.
Well, Tudor, is Michigan blue now? We really need Michigan to at least go back to being purple. It looks really blue from down here in Texas, Tudor. Is it just blue now?
No, that's the beauty of Michigan. We have the opportunity to make sure that we get Republican voters out. There are way more Republican voters in the state of Michigan than there are Democrat voters. But like I said, over the past few years, we've been really remiss in trying to get people out and using the latest technology to do so. You will still see Republicans say, we're going to door knock on every door while Democrats are getting a message to everybody's cell phone. And that's something that we've got to make sure we are reaching out to these people and we are educating them. They don't know every bill that's going by. Not everybody is watching TV. They don't even know that this is about to happen to them with EVs. They don't know this is about to happen to them with the climate bill. We are remiss in educating the public about what the Democrats are doing. So as soon as we get that message out there, as soon as we are effective messengers and we are doing the same things that the Democrats are doing, those people are going to come out and say, no, you're not going to do this to my state. But it falls on us to make sure they're educated, because the other side is doing a great job, and we need to be right out there with them.
Tudor, she hosts the Tudor Dixon podcast. Go give it a download. I think you'll enjoy it. I certainly do. Thank you, ma'am. All right. Let's lighten the mood, shall we? And you know what will lighten the mood of someone special in your life? Because it's Christmas season. You know you can give the gift of a First TV subscription to someone in your life? Mom, dad, husband, wife, sister, son, daughter,
they want a First TV subscription. You get access to all of our specials, history specials, I do all these things, and you can give it as a gift. Go thefirsttv.com/support. That's where you go sign up. We'll be back.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right. It is time to lighten the mood, and we need a lighten the mood after that show. So I have this problem, and there's a problem at the house, and this is why we picked this video today. We had the same toaster, my wife and I, since we got married. I'm pretty sure it was a wedding gift, but we had the same toaster. Now, that was 16, 17 years ago. No, I'm not keeping track, but it was a long time ago. And we finally decided, okay, but this toaster's on the fritz. Got to get a new toaster. So I took advantage of some Black Friday deals and got what I thought was a nice toaster. Only now, burns a toast every time. Ah, just adjust the settings. I know you can adjust the settings. It doesn't matter the setting. It comes out burnt every single time. Anyway, that inspired me to enjoy this video maybe more than I would have. A video of a man who burnt his pizza. I hear you, buddy. I've been there. I'll see you tomorrow.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our new podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. We're both journalists who moonlight as poker players, and that's the lens we're going to use to approach this entire show.
We're going to be discussing everything from high-stakes poker to personal questions.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
And of course, we'll be talking about the election, too.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.